The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast. And by Vistar Credit Union with locations across Gator Country. Visit vistarcu.org. And also, The Humidor, going the distance for fine cigars.
This is Duly Noted, everything Florida Gators, with your host, Pat Duly.
Okay, welcome into another edition of the Duly Noted podcast. Appreciate everybody for clicking on. Always a lot of fun talking to everybody. A little under the weather today, so bear with me. But Florida Vanderbilt, I'm not going to talk a ton about the game because we all saw it. I mean, you know, the number one question I got asked after that game was, is this the worst Vandy team you've ever seen? And my first reaction was, no, it can't be. It can't be the worst Vandy team because I think Kalijah Lipscomb is a really good player. And I think Pinckney's a really good player. And I think Keyshawn Vaughn's a really good running back. It can't be the worst team. But you know what? Those are the only three guys they have. And they aren't playing very well. Lipscomb did nothing in the game. I didn't even know. After the game, I had to turn to Robbie and say, did Pinckney even play in the game? Maybe he didn't. I didn't bother to look at the box score. And Keyshawn Vaughn, Florida contained. They said, hey, we're going to contain him. They've got no quarterback. And there you had it. Now, at halftime, I'm sure there was a little people with, you know, you never want to let a team hang around to see, oldest cliche in the world, but it's an accurate. You know, I always talk about there's accurate cliches. That's an accurate cliche. You don't want to let teams hang around. If you do, you might, then all of a sudden you kick one, boom, they return it for a fumble, it's 14-7, or, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn breaks one. Like remember the Ralph Webb breaking that 80 yards, was it, against Florida that one year, the kid from Gainesville? And he did that, and all of a sudden they were right in the game. I think they won that game 9-7. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. Anyway, so that's what you don't want to do. But instead, Florida came out and did what they do a lot in second halves, which is really play well offensively. And to get that first, I don't want to call it a cheap touchdown, because you can't call it a cheap touchdown when you make a guy, when you blow a guy away with a stiff arm and outrun everybody. That's not a cheap touchdown, but it was an easy touchdown for Kyle Trask. So you get that to Trayvon Grimes, and then you drive down and get another one. And then you get the strip sack by Diabate, who had a tremendous game, and Grenard's run. It's interesting about Grenard's run after the game because, I mean, the guy was motoring. He was motoring. He really was. And all I could think was, is, man, if that ankle had been good last week, you know, I don't know that it would have made any difference, but clearly his ankle's not an issue anymore. And it never felt, though, like I was sitting there watching that game going, you know, they better kind of take care of business, but I think they will. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I wasn't, you know, like sometimes you get really invested in a college football game that you're covering. And I'm not saying I didn't try to do the best job I can. I'm just saying sometimes you're really invested and you're writing down every play and all these stats. And other times you say, I'm just going to write about what happens. I'm not going to worry about detail. That was that kind of game. I just watched it. And after it was over, I went down and talked to some people and just wrote about what the mood was. And what part of the mood, and I give you guys credit, was the way the crowd showed up. I thought it could be really small crowd. You just lost to Georgia. You had a noon game, which everybody declares they don't like. I mean, I think we did a poll, and I think we did one a while back, where you did favorite game time, noon, 3:30, 7:30, I guess would be really the only options. Because if you say 3:30, 4, what difference does it make? 7:30, 8, what difference does it make? Those are the three options. I think it would be probably, well, if it was the people who own businesses around here, it would be 80% 3:30. I think it would be a 40-40 split between 3:30 and 7:30. and then Noon would get the other 20%. Because there are people who really like him, not just stupid sports writers like me. There are people who really like that that new start. They like to be able to get done with it and then watch football and be done with their day. And I know Dan Mullen likes it a lot too. But you had a noon start. You had a situation where you just lost to Georgia. And you know how I'm always saying it's not enough that the Gators are playing. When you're playing Vandy, it's kind of this, you're in the same boat. It's not enough that the Gators are playing. Who are they playing? Vandy, forget it. And I know I have people in my family who didn't come to this game with tickets. So, but I was surprised how good a crowd it was, how they did the, that wasn't like a stupid loud crowd, bounce, what I call bounce house crazy loud, but it was loud and they did the job, right? Crowd helped. And that's all you can do. You're not going to ever win a game as a crowd. You just, if you can help once in a while, you don't have to help every game. You don't have to help against Towson, but you got to help against Auburn, you know. And it may not be enough, but you can still do it. And I thought the crowd helped. So that's always a great thing. So anyway, Florida Vanderbilt, the Gators get to win number 8. I'm trying to do the projections on what bowl game Florida is going to go to. And a lot of, you know, obviously if they win out, I think they're going to get into a New Year's Six bowl. If they split these two games, and look, I'm not there. Missouri, we all know what Missouri's done against Florida. And FSU's got a rejuvenation under Odell Higgins. Florida's better than both teams. Should beat them, but you never know. It's college football. So they say they split them and they go 9-3, which is what they went last year. They ain't going to New Year's Six Bowl like they did last year. They're probably destined for the citrus. And I wouldn't be real happy about that. But, you know, they've kind of played their way out to at least the level of the Outback Bowl, I would say. All right. We always take a break right here. We'll do that. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit about LSU Alabama because, look, you can't help it. I want to really talk a lot of college football today. Florida Vanderbilt's not worth spending a lot of time on, and I'll get to Florida Missouri on Thursday and the podcast there. But I'm going to talk a lot of college football. In fact, later in the show, Cecil Hurt, the sports columnist from the Tuscaloosa News, we're going to get the backlash there. Looking forward to listening to him, I better ask him good questions then on the podcast. We'll be right back here on the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
At Vistar, we believe in better, especially in helping build a better financial future for our members. So we've reviewed our offerings from the ground up. We've lowered or eliminated over half our fees and enhanced our already competitive rates, saving members more than $1 million this year, in addition to the millions we save them every year. If you believe that saving money is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. All loans subject to approval, insured by NCUA.
Tailgates and Gator Wins call for the best cigars available from around the world. Pick your sticks today and save at the Florida family-owned site, thehumidor.com. Get free shipping on every cigar order. Find boxes from the biggest brands, samplers hand-selected by top tobacconists, or pick your own single sticks. Thehumidor.com, going the distance for fine cigars. Okay, so there may be some of you that already clicked it off because you just want to hear about the Gators, and I'm going to get to Gators. I'm going to talk basketball, and so I know you're ready for that, not in a good way. But I want to talk some college football. I want to talk about the CFP. I want to talk the Heisman. I want to talk about the games that happened, coaching carousel, all that stuff, because that's stuff that really, really interests me, and it's my podcast. We'll start out with LSU Alabama. It lived up to the hype. There's no question about it. I mentioned this in my column. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire has played his way into my all-SEC ballot. To me, you know, like Joe Burrow was the difference in the game, but he was the X factor. And the funny thing is, watching that game, I kept thinking to myself, what happened? Where did we go to this where you get 46-41 in LSU-Alabama? And it's my feeling, and I may be dead wrong about this. I mean, it started slowly, but the catalyst of all this, what we're seeing in college football with teams in the SEC especially, was Tua. Because I think when Tua came on board and they started throwing all over the place and they were putting up points and you couldn't beat them. Now, it certainly started under Steve Spurrier, but then it kind of faded back a little bit. You know what I mean? During the Les Miles, you know, even Nick Saban was a running team and they throw to surprise you. They didn't have great quarterbacks. They were great, I mean, as a dynasty, but all that. But anyway, I think when Tua came on the scene, because what happens? What happens? Trevor Lawrence happens. They go, hey, we can't beat them scoring 25 points. So we got to get Trevor Lawrence in there. Kelly Bryant, of course, leaves. And then I think it's part of the inspiration for Ed Ogeron to say, I got to get this Joe Brady guy. We've got to do what the fans have been wanting us to do for 5-6 years. And you see it continue. I think in Florida's case, it's different. And it's not for a good reason. I think it's different in Florida's case because Florida is passing because that's where their talent is. And they wish they could run the ball better. And they wish their offensive line was better. But it's not. And now they're playing. They're starting two freshmen. So you kind of have to play to your strengths. In fact, you definitely have to play to your strengths. And Florida's strength is their wide receiver. And that's why they're doing it. But they still kind of would like to win the game 24-17. Georgia's still that way. Georgia hasn't evolved as much. Now, Georgia kind of half evolved because of what they did in the playoffs a couple years ago, but they haven't completely evolved. Am I making any sense at all? All right. Now, I feel like the one thing that watching that game that I came away with is the level of play at the wide receiver position in this league is so ridiculous that it's now the wide receiver conference. It used to be this conference was all about the defensive lines. And there are really good defensive linemen out there. In fact, I think Alabama and LSU have really good defenses, but not against those offenses. They don't. They don't have that guy. They don't have a Keenan Williams. They don't have anybody who can dominate on the defensive line. Auburn's the only one that has that. But it's not. It used to be there would be 30 of these guys in the league. Big, strong, fast, mean, smart, could play the position like no other. And things that happened were just amazing. That's why this league dominated for so long. But not now. Now it's wide receiver. Wide receiver C, I guess we'll call it. The wide receiver conference. Go try to pick. Let's say that you got to do this all SEC ballot. You got to pick two wide receivers. Good luck. Have fun with that. I mean, it's ridiculous how good they are. And it's that way all over the country. It's getting to be that way. Now, this was a huge win for LSU for a lot of reasons. A lot of them are tangible things that you see. But I think more than anything, it was more about their psyches. They had to beat LSU. Now, look, I was rooting for Alabama, I got to tell you. I said they had to beat LSU. They had to beat Alabama. I was rooting for Alabama. That's just who I decided to root for. Although every time they showed a crowd shot of disappointed fans, it didn't bother me. but, you know, they had to win this game. If they lost this one with as well as they've played this year with all the big wins, it wouldn't even matter. It wouldn't even have mattered if they'd snuck in at fourth in the college football playoff. It wouldn't have mattered. They just said, big deal. I'm telling you. That may sound like the most outlandish thing I've ever said on this podcast, but I'm telling you, that would have damaged their psyche so bad they wouldn't even hardly care. They would have cared some. They wouldn't have cared as much as anybody else. They had to have it. And like after the game, if you saw this video, LSU players, are going down to where the Alabama recruits are sitting in the Alabama stadium and say, man, you need to come with us, come to our school. Sometimes winning is, you know, like I've never believed that like winning a game gets you a recruit. Man, I'm starting to soften on that because that may have done it right there for some of those guys. And, you know, I'm also a big believer in saying that the Heisman Trophy is never over until the last game is played, and I will never vote until the Sunday or Monday after the final game is played in the regular season and championship games. That's when you have to have your vote in. I would never do that. But we all know what's going to happen. And I don't know when I felt like this. Even last year, Tua, Murray. That's the way that went. Right in the last minute, everybody went, well, Murray. It was like Tua. He's the best. He's the greatest. He struggled a little bit there. Kyler Murray? Sure. This year, I don't see any way that happens. Joe Burrow would have to rob a bank not to win the Heisman. I mean, seriously. And I don't like to be saying that because I'm a believer that the season's a whole season. You have to evaluate the whole season. But, man, when you do what you did against Florida and you do what you did against Texas and you do what you did against Alabama at Alabama, I'm sorry, man. Now, they could lose a game. Who do they have left? Ole Miss and A&M? I think not. But they could. I don't know that it would change my opinion. He has done so much to change that situation at LSU. Not just for this year, but maybe for the future. So I don't think there's – and I'll tell you what, Coach of the Year is over too, isn't it? Who else would you even think about voting for? The guy that we make fun of. He's still fun to make fun of. It's okay. The guy is getting it done. I don't get it. I don't know how he's doing it. He obviously – see, that's the thing that drives me crazy. LSU's not very good on defense, right? They've got all these five stars, and they're not that good. But you know, and they have a great defensive coach in Dave Aranda. But you know what? When they have to make a play, they always make it. And that's – they did it against Florida. They did it against Auburn. They did it against Alabama. This time they kind of made them early. Anyway, I thought it was just a fascinating game to watch, for me anyway. Okay, college football playoff will come out tonight, the new rankings. I don't know why you would consider Ohio State over LSU. I don't think they will. I think LSU will be the difference maker. But here's what I was looking at. Look at the big wins. There's no losses, so look at the big wins. Cincinnati, which has turned out to be really good, and they just killed them. Indiana, which has turned out to be a really good win, but come on, Indiana and Wisconsin, they killed them. LSU, Florida, Auburn, Alabama at Alabama, Texas neutral site, sorry. It's not even close to me. It's just not. And the thing is, even some of those lower level SEC wins in the West can help you. Of course, Arkansas ain't going to help anybody. And we'll get to that after the break. But the big question, of course, when they do it reveal tonight, who will be number four? My feeling is Georgia should be excused to a point for their bad loss. It's a bad, bad loss. It gets worse every day. In fact, wait a minute. It just got worse even more. That loss to South Carolina is terrible. But the wins, Notre Dame, Florida, at a neutral site, are a lot better than Alabama's. What has Alabama got? They got nothing. They've got nothing as wins. They're going to have a chance to get them. And I don't know. But if Alabama's ahead of Georgia, I think Alabama should be sixth, the more I've thought about it. But it's going to be fascinating just to kind of watch this going in. You know, kind of not having a dog in the hunt, but having a dog in the hunt, because obviously we want Florida to go to the best bowl possible so they treat the media the best. Just kidding. But it's going to be good. All right. I want to get into basketball, and I'll spend a little bit of time on that. But as long as we're still talking football, let's go ahead and bring in Cecil Hurt from the Tuscaloosa News, and appreciate him for joining us. We'll talk to him, and then we'll come back, and we'll do after that, we'll talk about Gator basketball and the disaster, the coaching carousel, three things, some of the big duds of the year, right after this break on the Duly Noted podcast at Gatorsports.com. Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or visit Zaxby's.com. All right, welcome back to the Duly Noted podcast. Appreciate everybody for clicking on. Joined now by the great Cecil Hurt, the columnist, sports columnist for the Tuscaloosa News, and known him for a long time. And, you know, the one thing I took about 100 things from that game Saturday night, but I kept thinking to myself, I wonder what it feels like in the press box, because it the electricity was coming off the television.
Oh, yeah, it was the same. Just, yeah, you get a top five game, and you've covered them, Pat. You've been involved with them, and you understand what I'm saying. Sometimes they don't live up to expectations. You know, sometimes they end up one-sided, or they're not very well played, or they're not that exciting. But when it all comes together like that, there's nothing better than college football. Important, meaningful, regular season college football game on a campus with that atmosphere. I think it, in some ways, again, because it's at one of the schools, you've got a home crowd, you've got visiting fans, you've got that dynamic involved. You got two quarterbacks playing great, which you don't always have even on Sundays. So when it all comes together like that, there's nothing better in football. Not postseason college, not NFL. That's the best.
What time did you get to the park?
I actually got there about 9:30. The Secret Service and that.
I don't blame you.
It wasn't a situation where you had to be there at 6 a.m. You know, it wasn't like that. You just get there before they start closing the roads, and everything was fine. We had no trouble with that. Had they not introduced? I mean, there was one extra layer, like in the championship game in Atlanta.
Yeah,
there was one extra layer of security in terms of going through the gates and so forth, as far as metal detector and that kind of thing. But they hustled us right through there. Had they not introduced the president, you almost wouldn't have been aware from our standpoint, from a working standpoint, that he was there. So you certainly were aware from a crowd standpoint and so forth.
Right.
But as far as any hardship on us, there really wasn't.
I was talking about this before, but it's like, I don't think LSU and Alabama are bad on defense at all. I think they're really good defensively. They may not be as dominant either side as they've been.
It's not 2011. But
yeah,
you're correct.
But still, those two quarterbacks and those two offenses made them look terrible, both of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's, for instance, just the last Alabama touchdown where Tua finds Devontae for an 84-yard touchdown. That's Darryl Stingley out there. You know, that's the freshman that would be a first rounder if he came out this year. I mean, that's. But it's just hard to when players can throw and catch like that, and you've got receivers like that, and you've got multiple receivers like that, and your quarterback makes good decisions like Joe Burrow does, and has a little bit of a run option, which Tua can have. He didn't really have as much on Saturday because of the ankle. But I don't know how you survive as a defensive coordinator. And, and the playoffs are going to show that. Nobody's going to shut down Ohio State, LSU, other teams that make it. And that's the number one thing in college football at that level. To thrive and to win it, you got to have a quarterback. I mean, you've got to have a quarterback and be able to do that against the very good teams.
Is it possible that, and this has been the narrative this week, that Auburn fans, I mean, Alabama fans are going to be rooting for Auburn this week because it'll help them?
You know, you'd like to say yes, but probably not.
It's not worth it, right?
It's like you have to do the math problem in class, you know, and you have to show your work because the answer really is people can just immediately leap to the answer, which is no. But it would certainly help hypothetically in three ways in terms of contributing to getting Georgia completely out of the picture with a second loss or a potential third loss in the championship game. That would make Georgia's game with Texas A&M kind of interesting, frankly.
Well, where are the Alabama fans right now with this team? I mean, are they like hopeful, or do they feel like, gosh, we couldn't beat LSU at home? How are we going to beat them on a neutral site?
Fans are hopeful. You know, fans want to see their team do well, and they're not as concerned with who they would have to play. They'd struggled defensively against LSU, Clemson, Ohio State. You know, you just want a chance. You just want to get in there. So that's where they are from that standpoint. Will it happen? You know, it's happened before. Probably not to the degree that the narrative is, oh, Alabama always gets favorable treatment from the committee. Well, yeah, there's been 5 years of the committee. Alabama's been the SEC champion with either one loss or zero losses four times. So I don't know that they're getting some huge benefit of the doubt by making the playoffs. The 1 year that they weren't the SEC champion, they went on and won the national championship. So I don't know that they've had any undeserving teams that were blindly rewarded under the playoff system. I think there's some hangover from 2011 still for some people.
There is, but 2011's why we have a playoff.
I realize
they should
that.
They should be thrilled that at Alabama getting in that playoff game. And, you know, that to me, that was the genesis of having a playoff.
To quote David Byrne, Pat, stop making sense.
Well, and yeah, that's the other thing is, it's almost like on radio, and you've been on a bunch of radio shows, I'm sure, but when I'm listening to sports talk radio, and they're like so convinced Alabama's going to be four tonight that they're already mad about it. And I'm like, well, calm down. These are guys with a lot of numbers in front of them. They'll figure it out to the best of their ability.
And that's a triumph for ESPN to make people interested.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kudos to them, tip of the hat to them. That they can make that compelling. I don't know that I would be appalled or that anybody at Alabama would be shocked if Minnesota was number four. And I would get that because people would talk about it. And you know what? Minnesota's situation is going to take care of itself. If they run the table, they ought to be in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
If they don't, they won't be. So if they're number four on November the 12th, you know, Doesn't add up to anything. You can spend a lot of words on Minnesota this week, and then go to Iowa and get beat on Saturday.
Right.
So we'll see what happens with that. But it's a great story. I'm not against people talking about it, but 4, 5, 6. You know, Clemson people just got beside themselves last week because they were fifth. Well, now they're not fifth, and nothing's changed but the date, and Alabama played LSU. So, again, credit to ESPN for making it interesting programming that really doesn't, at this time of year, amount to a whole lot.
Where would you put Alabama if you were on the committee right now?
Probably the same as AP and the coaches, probably fourth. But that doesn't mean they'll hold at four.
Right.
You know, there are teams below them that could pass them. There's an SEC championship game to be played. If Georgia runs the table, I would be the first person to say, if Georgia runs the table from here and beats LSU in a compelling SEC championship game, and you've got those two teams in the SEC sitting there with one loss, and LSU's beating Alabama head-to-head, I would take Georgia and LSU. You know, that, and that's regardless of where Alabama's ranked today. So things can work out like that. I would have them fourth today, but, you know, if Georgia beats the heck out of Auburn, you might, and Alabama struggles in Starkville, you might jump Georgia next week. And that's, you know, that's just one example. You've got Oregon out there. You've got Minnesota out there. So again, that's, I would have them fourth this week, which is not some radical position. It's the AP position. It's the football writers position. It's, you know, a lot of the computer polls position. But I would say that knowing that there would still have a lot of work to do because they don't select the teams on November the 12th.
One last thing for you, Cecil, and I appreciate the time. I love angry Nick Saban. I've learned to love him. He's one of my favorite characters in college football. I don't like humbled Nick Saban. Some people love humbled Nick Saban. I don't like that guy. I like the angry Nick Saban. I'm guessing he was more on the humbled side than the angry side on Saturday night.
You know, he gets angry at dumb things. If you notice that,
that's why I like it.
what sets him off isn't that a guy plays his best and they lose. And there was an element of that. There are a lot of guys who didn't play their best because anytime you lose in any endeavor, in any sport, in any college, you know, some guys didn't make some plays that were there to be made. But, you know, I don't think they're down 33-13 at the half. His guys fought hard, made it a classic game, fought back. So, now, is he mad at Landon Dickerson for getting a stupid personal foul late, you know, shoving a guy after an interception? Sure he is. That's angry Nick Saban, and that's what you see on the sidelines, and that's who you see him jump on. But he doesn't just berate guys who are doing their best and just don't win, or, you know, that's what you're talking about. That's humble Nick Saban, that, hey, LSU played well. And he doesn't get angry. People have such misconceptions about that. He's the least concerned guy. If they're fourth, fifth, sixth,
oh, yeah,
he's not going to be mad about that. That doesn't make him mad. Now, you know, he'll get mad at his coaching staff, or he'll get mad at reporters who ask things that he does not feel are intelligent points. But he's you know, that's what makes him mad, and that's why people like you like mad Nick Saban, because he's not railing for the sake of railing. And he may not be always right about when he rails, but he at least perceives that there's a reason for him to be doing it.
He is Cecil Hurt, the sports columnist for the Tuscaloosa News, and does a tremendous job. We'll be right back with more on the Duly Noted podcast at Gatorsports.com. Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or visit Zaxby's.com. Okay, welcome in to the last part of the Duly Noted podcast. I'm doing this in a weird order, so I just screwed that up, but you don't mind. Again, we're going to talk some of this basketball. Look, guys, I know that we all overhyped this Florida basketball team. Their ranking was higher than I think made anybody comfortable over there in that building. You know, when Jay Billis is talking about them being in the Final Four, I think that made people uncomfortable. This team might end up being great, okay? But we know just from watching that FSU game, it's not now. You could even see it in the other games, the preseason game and the North Florida game. They just didn't look sharp. They didn't look connected yet. And that's going to take some time. Don't forget, it's three sophomores, it's a senior, and then it's a bunch of kids, a bunch of freshmen. When those sophomores don't play well, like, they can't have Nembhard and Locke going 3-for-18. Now, I give FSU's defense a lot of credit. You knew that was going to be the defense. They always play great defense. That's what they do. That's their calling card. Like Kerry Blackshear told me when I asked somebody, he goes, man, I've been playing 4 years. There's nothing new to me. He knew what they were going to do. They were going to foul him and make him shoot free throws. I watched their game against Pitt. They had at least two guys foul out, maybe more. They're a very physical team. And Florida didn't handle the physicality. Again, Scotty Lewis doesn't have an NBA body yet. Certainly Trey Mann's nowhere close to an NBA body. Nembhard is trying to still get one. He's closer, but he's not there. So they're playing against a bunch of physical guys. Now, I'm saying all this. There's no excuse for that, for what happened Sunday. There is no excuse for playing that poorly. And people are all over Mike White. I know it's the I don't call him the lunatic fringe, but I do call him the squeaky wheels. They get mad and send me emails and go on radio shows and start complaining. Don't judge a team by its second basketball game. A lot of us, and I was the leader of the pack, judged last year's football team on its second game. And how wrong was that? It's very early. Let's wait and see what happens here. The disconcerting thing to me wasn't even the lack of offense. And I know people felt like they were – look, you can say, you know, they walked the ball up the court. They walked the ball up the court because there's a guy guarding them. There's a guy trying to get it, turn them over. You know, it's hard to race up down the court, and Nembhard's not that quick. This is what you have to – they have to get better at. They got to have more guys helping them out on that instead of just slowly bringing it up the court. And you start off – every possession with like 8 seconds going on the shot clock. That's the plan. And I get all that. And look, the bottom line was there was at least five shots, at least, maybe more, that went down into the basket and scooped out. And I heard Shane Matthews was talking on the radio yesterday saying the rims are too tight. I don't know. But if they make those shots, if they all go in, they win the game, or this, obviously it's coming down the wire. The bigger concern to me was the defense. They played good defense at times, and certainly in the first half they played good defense. But one time they went to a zone, it took three passes to get a wide open dunk. Obviously, the one play that was a hard, you know, they cut it to 10. All right, here comes the run. The crowd's starting to get fired up. They leave a guy wide open. Could have had a sandwich. Could have watched at least half of Mike and Molly before he had to let go of a shot. He's their best shooter. Now, he was ill coming into the game, and didn't, that was the only basket he made. Trent Forrest, the only basket he made, 1-for-7. They weren't great on offense either, but they started making – they made just enough shots. Kind of reminds me of a lot of teams that make runs. Now, I don't think FSU is going to make any kind of run. Don't forget, Pitt lost to Nichols their next game. Pitt beat FSU. But we don't care about FSU. What I care about is Florida and why they played so poorly. And why they played so many minutes. Blackshear played 35 and a half. Nembhard played 37 and a half. That says to me they really don't have. Quez Glover really isn't a backup point guard. He's just a guy that'll stick in there every once in a while. So they've got to still figure it out. I don't understand. And again, I'm sure there's a good reason. Maybe he was hurt. Dante Bassett didn't play in the game. It's a matter of figuring things out. I believe in Mike White. I think he's a really good coach. He knows what he's doing. Sometimes I wonder how good he is at communicating those things. You know, just getting through to guys. Sometimes you fill their heads with a lot of stuff. You know, I remember, and this is, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, though. I'm going to get in trouble. But a certain radio announcer, color radio announcer, said one time he liked it when Florida was playing the Thursday, Saturday, because there was only so much coaching they could do in between. And this is the Billy Donovan era, who obviously had a lot of success. As you may or may not know. But sometimes they overload teams with that, with too much information. Let's go play basketball. Hey, if you yell out fire when we're double teaming, this is what Mike was saying, you got to yell it out. Fire! You can't go fire, fire. Crowd's loud. Rowdies were loud. My little Kelsey was part of the Rowdies. That was kind of cool, seeing her wave that flag. That was the highlight of the day for me. So don't worry about them, but worry about them. You know what I mean? Like, I think they'll be all right. I think they'll figure it out. I like, Scotty Lewis doesn't seem to have any offensive game. Again, I can go by is highlight reels and rankings and where they placed him, but he doesn't look like a guy who can score. So I know his forte is defense. That's the thing. He's going to play defense. But I thought you would get a little something out of him. 0 for 4 on Saturday. Didn't make his free throw, or Sunday. He didn't make his free throws. Too many turnovers, too many missed shots. It usually leads to a loss. Maybe it was just one of those days, okay? First game, first big game for these guys together as a team. So I'm not going to get overly concerned about it, but there's a little bit of me that's worried. I did want to talk about the M's. This is the M's of college football in the SEC. And we start out with Mason, as in Derek Mason. That team he brought in here, probably ain't going to win any more games. Although I think they have one. Well, you can't even say they have an easy game. I don't even know who they play, so I'm speaking out of turn. I think they play it's an East opponent, I think, this week. But whoever they play, they lost to UNLV. This is a bad team. They're probably going to go 2-10, I would guess, right? Isn't it the record? They have 2 wins right now? 2-10? That's bad. I mean, that's not Vandy bad. That's bad. Vandy bad's 4-8. And I don't know, but I don't know. Like, I met their new AD. Very, very nice guy. I talked to him and his assistant for about 15 minutes up there. And we were talking about what they can do and all this. And it was so funny. You don't talk to many ADs where they keep saying to you, you know, you're absolutely right. And I don't think this wasn't an Amway sale. This was, I kind of know Vanderbilt. I've been there enough. And he knows Vanderbilt, obviously, having been there for a little while. And we kind of both have we're on the same wavelength. But the thing is, what do you do with Derek Mason? Can you be a big winner with Derek Mason? Can Vandy be a big winner? I still don't get James Franklin. I don't know what happened there. I don't know how they won all those games. I guess he's just a great coach. But that means you have to have a coach that is a, you know, top 10. Would you say James Franklin's a top 10 coach, top 15 coach to win at Vandy? And they're hard to come by. They're hard to get anywhere. Just look what happened at FSU. Look what's been happening at Tennessee. They're hard to get. How do you get one to Vanderbilt? My thing, if I was there, I would say, hey, guys, we are going to go and we're going to get a coach. We're going to give him a 5-year deal. And we're not going to pay him a lot of money at the beginning, but we'll be willing to do extensions. We're going to continue to work on what we're trying to do with the stadium. We've got to figure it out. It's hard. He and I, that's the thing we were talking about. They're like Florida. Where do you go? There's nowhere to move. They've already decided against moving, building a new facility, so they're going to have to do it there. But the baseball stadium's like literally the third base dugout is in the football stadium. It's so close. There's nowhere to go. So I don't know what the answer is there unless you just put in chair backs everywhere. That may be the answer, but can they afford that? But I go get an offensive guy. I don't just get an offensive guy. I get an offensive nut. I get a guy who's going for every fourth down and who's throwing it, you know, as many times as he can, who throws trick plays at it, and just tell fans, hey, look, we're going to have fun for a couple of years. We may not win a whole lot. We may not win any more than Derek Mason won. And I've been saying this for a lot of years, by the way. I always thought they should have gotten Steve Spurrier Jr. and brought him in there. We're going to throw it. We're going to have fun. And eventually people are going to want to come here. We're going to build this team up and we're going to be okay. And we're going to win enough games so we can go bowling. We're never going to be, you know, we're not even Uncle Rico. We've never been good. So we're not trying to get there. We're just trying to get where it's entertaining and you want to come to the games. And when you want to come to the games, the other team won't be able to drown us out. Okay, that's one. Number two for the M's, Muschamp. obviously another crippling loss for them. They lose to Appy State. There's no real shame in that. Appy State was ranked last week. I thought they were about to fade away, and I was wrong. I missed that pick. Muschamp says there's no truth to the rumors that they want him, that Ray Tanner wants him to change his staff up, but you know that conversation is probably going to take place, and you know it's probably going to happen because he does it a lot. Muschamp has been a kind of, I got to make changes to save my job kind of guy. And I mean, I've said it a million times. I love the guy. I think he's a great guy. But you gotta win better. You even when you have a lot of injuries and a bad season, this is what happened to him in year three at Florida. Yeah, kind of a tough schedule. Yeah, a lot of injuries. Driscoll and Easley being the two biggest ones. But you still can't go 4-8, and you can't lose to Georgia Southern or Appy State. I don't think they're going to get rid of him, but I think he is now officially on the hot seat for 2020. You know, already they're talking about Shiloh Sanders, who's Deion Sanders' son. They may redshirt him, and that doesn't sound like a coach who's trying to win his job and save his job. They're not going to go to a bowl. They got Clemson to end the year, okay? That's the end of that. Let's go to the third M, and that's Chad Morris, who, of course, was fired. Not stunning. I read some of the AD's quotes. He said, you know, the players weren't having any fun. Who's ever having fun when you're 2-8? Show me a team. Maybe the Washington Generals. They got those two wins. They were pretty happy. Nobody gets happy when you're 2-8. If that's the reason you got rid of him, that's crazy. I think you got rid of him because he seemed to be a little bit in over his head. It is a hard job. I said it was might be the 13th best job, and I think I'm in the SEC, and I think you can make an argument Missouri. Starkville's a better job. I'm sorry. It's a better stadium. It's a better it's not necessarily a better stadium, but I think it's a more fertile recruiting ground. You've built up some winning tradition there. I mean, Dan Mullen won there. We all know that for a lot of years. Arkansas had it going with Bobby Petrino. You know, maybe, again, going back to an offensive guy. All right, maybe it's not a better job than Mississippi State. Maybe it's not a better job than Missouri, which I don't think is a great job. And they win with 3 and 2-star guys. There's some bad jobs in this conference, for as good a conference as it is. And I'm wondering if as the bad jobs get worse, which I think they will, whether we see even more separation at the top, because we've seen it this year. Crazy separation. LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Georgia. Who's the sixth best team? I don't know. Yeah, so maybe it's going to even get more so that way. And the fourth M is Missouri, which got shut out on Saturday. This is still a really good defense Missouri has, but, man, they can't score. Kelly Bryant didn't play. He hurt his hamstring, of course, a week before. Probably going to play in this game Saturday. I don't know what a difference he makes. It's just, to me, it's the most confounding thing to see a team that's played so well at home and so badly on the road. Everybody plays better at home than on the road, right? Except Florida. Florida's played pretty well on the road. But as a rule, you play better at home on the road for the obvious reasons, but you don't see this much of a disparity. Can't play dead on the road, can beat anybody at home. Obviously, it's going to be a scary game for Florida, and I wrote about it for Thursday's paper. I'm going to make you wait and read that about why Missouri has kind of owned Florida. Coaching carousel is coming up. I'm going to keep going. I was going to do a short one today. I've got some things going on, but I'm going to keep going because I think talking is going to be the best thing for me. Coaching carousel is going to get really interesting, obviously. Now, you got Arkansas open, not that great a job. Yeah, probably, like, I don't think Joe Brady, for example, would take that job, but if you could get Joe Brady, that would be huge. I don't think he would take that job. Even a 30-year-old guy would be a good hire for Arkansas. And that's the thing with FSU open, with that open, we assume USC is going to come open. I don't know what's going to happen, Vandy. I don't know what's going to happen. I think South Carolina, I think he'll be safe. But, you know, they get really embarrassed by Clemson. Who knows? There are going to be more jobs opening up in college football. We do know this. We had the same coaches for 2 years in a row at the SEC Media Days. We're not going to have them now. The names that are going to keep coming up are Matt Campbell. Mike Leach's name is always going to get thrown in there. And here's what happens with Mike Leach. And I know Mike Leach a little bit, just enough for the golf tournament, dealing with him on there. He's an interesting guy, there's no doubt. But I think with Mike Leach, every time somebody goes, hey, you know Mike Leach, what about Mike Leach for this job? Man, they throw it all over the place, and their quarterbacks are always good, and Gardner Minshew, blah, blah, blah. And then as you start to vet him, it's not even vetting him by looking up things. It's just mentally you vet him and you go, I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want a guy who hunts raccoons. I don't know what talking about ghosts and pirates and zombies. Let's try to get a football coach. He's a good football coach, but you'll hear his name. And the other one is Norvell. Obviously, Mike Norvell's done great things at Memphis. It'll be interesting to see. I can't think he's not going to get one of these jobs. He was up for a lot of them 2 years ago and fell flat for whatever reason. I think there may be some reasons there, but we'll see why he did and if he can get one of those jobs. Okay. Do I even got time? Do I have time to do this? Probably not. We're going to talk more about all the trap games and everything that are going on this week in the Thursday podcast. I'm hoping Ed Ashoff's going to join us. He's got to wait and see on his flights. He's in Baton Rouge. So we'll see. I saw this in Pat Forty's great column. He's now at Sports Illustrated, a good friend of mine, and great guy. Maybe we'll get Pat Forty on. Give him a little pub for moving over to SI. I may do that. We'll see. Anyway. He was listing his big duds, and I was running through them, and I wrote them down, and I was like, wow, what a year it's been kind of for duds. And he didn't even include FSU, which I don't think anybody had high expectations for FSU, but still, it's pretty bad. 5-5 now they are? Yeah. These are all teams under 500, okay? Michigan State, 4-5. And I'm wondering, with all the stuff that's going on there and as bad as their offense is and as chippy as he's been. Chirpy? No, he's been chippy. We're being chirpy. If D'Antonio survives, what if that job came up? And how good a job is that? I don't know. I've been to East Lansing. To me, it's not a good job. I was there and it was snowing. So it wasn't a good job for me. But that would be an interesting thing. Nebraska. Obviously, Scott Frost didn't go anywhere. 4-5. Well, I thought you guys were winning the division. Didn't you say you were going to win the division? No, you didn't, but a lot of people did. Syracuse, 3-6, which to me is the flop of the year. But maybe it's because I ranked them, and I shouldn't have. Although you could make an argument for Northwestern at 1-8. Washington State at 4-5. And that's another reason, even though Leach's name is going to get thrown in some of these mix, you start mentally vetting. Wait, they're under 500? No, thanks. And Stanford at 4-5. That's been a weird team all year. Not very good. Okay. You want to do three things? By the way, it's going to be really cold in Missouri, but the funny thing is, today it was 7. I don't know that I've ever been anywhere where it was single digits, but it was 7 today. It's going to be like 42 at kickoff. I'm looking it up right now to see what the last time Florida ever played a game when it's 42 degrees or lower. I'm on like 2005. Haven't found one yet. They did play one where it was 47, but that was the lowest. That was Missouri. Again, not a good job for me. All right, let's do three things.
It's time for three things.
Number one, I loved that the Pac-10, again, showed its transparency with its officiating. It's something I think the SEC should do. They'll never do it. It's too much of a Southern gentleman to call out the name of an official who screws up and costs you a game. And I don't know if it's cost the game or not, but it was a game. It was a play. It was Washington State and Cal. And Washington State ran the kickoff out to the 50. I think I got this right. Out to the 50. They called him for illegal hands to the face, backed him up to the 8. Turns out the illegal hands on the face should have been on Cal. They just misinformed the official. So now they've got to start the drive at the 8 instead of the 35 of Cal. That's a huge mistake. They end up driving for a field goal. Didn't work out for them. What if they driven? If the next play had been a 92-yard touchdown, it wouldn't have mattered. You cannot make mistakes like that. And they called them out. They called them out publicly, and they suspended one for a game and downgraded the others. Now, do I think the SEC is doing the same thing? Yeah, they are. I know for a fact that they have suspended officials in the past, and I still think they do. They downgrade them. They don't get to go to bowls, which is a big perk for SEC officials. But why not tell us? Instead, everybody says, oh, the SEC doesn't care about officiating. You're just being dumb not to do that. Yeah, well, we can't call out our young officials. They are doing such a great job. SEC just means more penalties. Number two, Peter Alonso, Rookie of the Year. Wow, shocking vote there, huh? So happy for him. And, you know, again, I'll tell the story again real quick. When he was on a tear at the beginning of the year, I called Sully and I said, hey, did you see this coming? He goes, nah. He says, nobody saw this coming. If somebody else saw it coming, why didn't they pick him first? I'm like, yeah, good point. But he knew he was a hard worker, and the polar bear is getting it done. And I hope he continues this because he is on such a ride. There's going to be an amazing amount of endorsements and stuff like that. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure, I believe he will be Mr. Two-Bits for the FSU game. Keep an eye out for that. I can't verify that. I have sources, though. Finally, number three, really disappointing to see Vernon Hargrave suspended, especially when you are not suspended, but cut by the Bucks, who are going nowhere, as usual. When you see that the reason he was cut was lack of hustle. I'm like, man, I kind of thought I knew Vernon Hargraves as a player pretty well. I didn't think that was a factor. I don't know if it is a factor or if they're just looking for scapegoats. He'll end up somewhere. But he's always been one of my favorite guys to deal with and one of the favorite players. So hate to see that, but, you know, get away from the Bucks and probably help your career. All right, that's going to do it for today's Duly Noted podcast. I know we went long, didn't we? Like 55 minutes? I'm just in a mood to talk. I appreciate all of you for listening to the show and all the kind words and even some of the criticism. I was going to bring up that All-SEC thing. Maybe I'll do it next week. All right. Until next time, I'm Pat Duly, sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I'm deep, way back, and I am out of here. The Duly Noted podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast. And by Vistar Credit Union with locations across Gator Country. Visit vistarcu.org. And also, the Humidor, going the distance for fine cigars.